Hello, everybody, and welcome. We are here checking in with John Anthony on the Checking In with John Anthony podcast. And oddly enough, John Anthony is here with us tonight. John, that's weird. How are you?
I'm doing good, Ryan. And yourself?
I'm doing great. Thank you. And we also have a guest with us, Jonathan. John Anthony and Jonathan. Jonathan, how are you doing, sir?
Real good. Thank you for having me with John Anthony tonight. Appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. So this evening, we're going to be doing a special for Veterans Day. John, why don't you take us through the bullet points that we're going to touch on this evening?
Well, I think what I'd like to cover is just, you know, first of all, to give gratitude for, you know, the service that vets do for our country, and to acknowledge that I am not a vet, and, you know, Jonathan is, and that's why we're having him here to honor it. And, you know, there's a lot of things that vets go through, a lot of trauma experiences that can really impact a person. And as I've worked with Jonathan for quite a few months now, you know, talking about things, we cover all kinds of subjects. Jonathan's also a former EMT, which is another very traumatizing job. I wanted to put out the hope of how a person can get through trauma in a way that they learn how to use the tools that we teach, and, you know, have Jonathan explain how they've been helpful for him. And also, I wanted to tie in the Native Americans, because I've learned a lot from Jonathan about Native Americans. And, you know, Native Americans have the highest number of people in the U.S. services per capita than any other group in our country. And, you know, because of their warrior tradition. But the thing is, the way that their tribes send them off to war and bring them home to war, which I found very unique and very close to doing things that we do. You know, they're talking about humanity of the warrior. And because when you go to war, being a human being is not gonna be helpful when you're trying to kill or be killed. And but when you to come back in society, it's very important that we, you know, help that person to reintegrate into society. And unfortunately, with all the high suicides and with our vets, it's there are a lot of people having trouble, and we're hoping to make an attempt to give some veterans some guidelines as to what they might be able to explore as they learn to support themselves as they're going through this by using the tools that we teach for people that have experienced violence in relationships that I've been doing for quite a few decades. So that's what I want to cover. And as usual, Ryan, we're going to kind of just flow with it like you and I usually do. So, Jonathan, what do you think has been the most helpful thing that you've experienced as you've dealt with, you know, the various incidents and traumas that you've gone through with your service in the Army and being an EMT?
The concept of self-love and the active exercise of self-forgiveness are two of the biggest things, John Anthony. My experiences that I am working through cover 60 plus years. Even before I entered into the Army, I had already been affected and not known it. And then there were experiences in the Army. I came home. There were experiences on the volunteer rescue squad, especially when I went to rescue situations using our crash truck, and sorting it out, getting it through, having an approach that really goes straight forward and addresses what is going on with me. This is far different than my previous treatment programs. And it's all been done without medicine. It's been done just by having an orderly program that is inclusive of many more things than other treatment programs referred to. So in that respect, I guess the biggest thing is it's a much more fuller-bodied approach rather than a almost tunnel vision on just one way and not including the other things that are attendant to a person going through the depression and altered behavior is maybe a better way of saying it, because when you come home and you don't realign to civilian life, you're in altered behavior. And when I came home, the first label that was applied to me was I was in culture shock. And that is very, very true. I was in culture shock because the culture of these services and its organization and supplies and everything is far, far different than what you have to do in civilian life. But I slowly spiraled after that. So to answer your question, really, it is the breadth and width of the program that is so inclusive of the many things that, or not many things, the good things that really are effective in straightening out and reordering your thinking, which then becomes your behavior.
Beautiful. Well, I don't know if beautiful is the term that I'm used, but I will say that what you said was very eloquent, very well spoken, and it sounds like it's also very sincere. So, Jonathan, thank you for your service, sincerely. And
I thank you and appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. And then I'm going to use that to kind of segue into something, and then hopefully that'll take us on another path with our conversation. So thank you for your service. And you know, Jonathan here knows that, John Anthony knows I'm a very big Jocko Willing fan. I like to say I'm part of the Extreme Ownership Echelon Front community, which is also Jocko Willink and his team. And I was fortunate enough to be chosen for a scholarship, and I went out to Las Vegas and took place in the seminar. Was it 2 weeks ago now? Yeah, it's 2 weeks ago now. But so that was quite the experience. And when I was with Jocko, his entire team is made up of veterans, former Top Gun commanders, former SEAL commanders, former Marine commanders, and all sorts of things like that. And one thing I've noticed is that obviously, I think that, you know, I'm not, you know, revealing any sort of secret here, but, and John and I talked about this before we started this recording, obviously, it can be very different for some people, right? Jocko and some of the people that work with him, they are hardened combat veterans. They openly admit on stage that what they wanted to do was, they didn't have a goal in life to murder, but they did openly tell everybody that they had the drive and will and goal of killing the enemy, right? And a few of them spoke about how the transition from military life, combat life, back to normalcy was a bit difficult for them. And then some of them say, when people thank me for my service, I almost feel bad because I had a great time doing what I did. And I don't think they necessarily are referring to killing people, but, you know, I think that we all know that there's people out there that enjoy the adrenaline that comes with combat. They enjoy the work. They enjoy working with firearms. They enjoy the structure. Sometimes in some cases, it's the structure they've been looking for their entire lives and have never found until they got to the service. So let me just ask you real quick, Jonathan, what, in your mind, what kind of separates people, veterans, the veterans who need a little more structure, a little more help integrating back into normal life from the veterans who are just adjust a bit easier than others and they're kind of just, they miss the combat and things of that nature? Is it a support group? Is it support from the family? Is it the way that they're built mentally and physically? Is it a combination of all three? What would you say?
Off the top of my head, Ryan, I'm thinking that leaving the service from that kind of structured organization and having so many resources and things done for you is now flipped on its head when you come home. Now you have to plan your day rather than your day planned for you. Now you have to go find food when it used to be food was found and cooked for you and all you had to do was walk into the dining hall. And you can go on from there. There is a great change in the sense of community, where once you were one of 10 in a squad or larger organizations, now you're by yourself. So you can extrapolate from there, Ryan, the difficulties that are encountered, and I'll return to one of my original phrases, culture shock.
Yeah.
I know it sounds difficult for some of your listeners to visualize that far back, but I was 19 in 1971 when I left for the Army. I was 22 when I returned. And when I returned, I could not recognize the community that I had left. I had never been in an indoor mall. I had never heard of some of the contemporary music and such that everybody took for granted. So I was behind in a lot of social norms, and I felt pressed to catch up, or I was considered an oddball. So that pressure to catch up, to be like everyone else, was my first challenge. And I did poorly at it because there was very, very little guidance. Today, I understand that there are classes given to service members as they exit the service. I heard the other day that it lasts from a week and a half to 2 weeks, that give resources and other outreach programs that helps a service member reintegrate into civilian life. But for me, there was no such thing. I dropped into Fort Dix at 4 o'clock in the morning, and at 6 o'clock the next night, they showed me the front gate. And that was the entire experience of leaving the service. So I'm not saying I had it worse. I'm saying that it is very different from what is today. And I don't want anyone to think that I'm an expert on how today's veterans are exiting the service and entering into civilian life. But I really do appreciate the challenges that they are encountering and facing returning to civilian life.
Got it. One thing I want to say real quick, and then I'm sure John has some things he wants to say ask rather. Well, say and then ask. So when I attended this event, we were, Jocko and his team were very interactive with everybody, which is something that you don't normally see. For I know a lot of people still don't know who he is, but he is he's very famous. He's an influencer, a great one at that. So people want his attention. So normally this ticket runs for over $3,000. I won one. Amazing. But it's almost like they understand we want to give people what they're paying for. We owe it to them. We owe them the attention, the respect. Long story short, when we did the meet and greet with Jocko and his team, I noticed that even though Jocko and his team were taking the time to talk to everybody, where are you from? What do you do? We're glad to have you. What's your family life like? All of that stuff. I noticed that the conversations with veterans kind of just went a little bit longer. They're a little bit more intimate. The body language was different. And I didn't take it personally because I'm pretty sure that the connection and the connection, even with people that you've never even met, when you're a veteran, when you've been in combat, when you've been in the service, it's something that you really don't understand unless you live through it. Is that accurate?
Very much so. You had the veterans, in speaking to the presenters, have a shared common ground. Immediately, there are the assumptions of basic training and advanced training into their occupational specialty, and then at least a 3-year contract stay for the service in that structured environment. And so a little more is known about a veteran who comes up than a civilian who comes up. Does that make sense?
Of course, yeah. Definitely, definitely makes sense. John?
So that's all I'm saying is there's so much more known about them prior to their introduction. That's what I'm saying.
And it's kind of almost like you, how do I say this? You're maybe immediately you're willing to be vulnerable. Does that make sense? Kind of like listen if the veteran has something to say, if perhaps, you know, the transition was a little bit harder for them, if they're still working through the transition mentally, maybe there was a divorce or something, whatever the case may be. But it's almost that's what I meant by the body language. It's almost like Jocko, he's 6 feet tall. He's as thick as a wall, right? But his body language is suddenly like, hey, how are you? How's everything going? I'm willing to listen to you. If you want to talk for 20 minutes, I'll figure out how to talk for 20 minutes. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. I'm not prepared to talk too much more about it, but I do understand what you're saying, and I'll refer to my previous statement. When he meets a vet, he already knows a lot about them.
That's a great way to put it.
A civilian is an unknown quantity.
Right. Got it. John Anthony, where are you at with everything? I know that Jonathan and I kind of took the conversation a little bit there.
Well, you know, I'm glad that you had the experience that you did, Ryan. And I know you were looking forward to it for, you've talked about, reading his book and you know, for months. And so I'm glad you had that opportunity to get to meet him. And, hopefully you had a chance to pick his brain, which maybe we could talk about on another podcast, but
sure.
I'd like to hear, more extensive about that. But with the reason I wanted Jonathan to come with us tonight is because I think one of the things that veterans have in common is that they've been through trauma, especially if, they've seen combat.
Of course.
And Jonathan made me aware of a show that's on PBS called Warrior Tradition, I think. Isn't that what it was, Jonathan? Warrior Tradition?
Exactly. Singular tradition,
yeah.
No S.
Yeah. And and I remember one of the men who had been in Korea said that, the conversation he was having with the people doing the documentary he's talking about things that he's never talked about with veterans, because they knew what each other had gone through. And I think that that's what Jonathan is alluding to. You know, when you go through things that you experience when you're in combat, it's all different because of different situations and you know, areas of deployment, but there's some core issues there, you know, that come down to fear. And, you know, and it's the fear of the unknown that is really scary. And so, Jonathan, I'd like to ask you, what role did fear play in your service? And I would think that at that time you might not have been really recognizing it as fear. And so how did you cope with that? And how are things different for you now? And when I say fear, I'm talking about fear of losing something that I have, or the fear of not getting something I desire. I'm not talking necessarily about physical safety fear, which is an obvious thing in combat.
Right. But
any of those. So can you expound on any of that, Jonathan?
Yes, sir, I can. And the first thing I want to say is I was not trained as a combat position. I was in support of frontline combat units. And because of that support, I was deployed to the field in training every time any unit that I supported was deployed. So I spent as much or more time in the field training for combat as a regular combat occupation person might have been. Now, as far as the fear, because of what I was responsible for, I had a very high level security clearance. My mission was critical for the safety of thousands of people, literally. And there is that feeling that there is something right behind you watching every move you make, that whatever you do right now has to be perfect, because the loss of attention or the mistake of a process has very real consequences, even in peacetime. So there was that pressure of doing my job well because of its role. And to all the soldiers that I was to come into contact with, I was responsible for training officers as well as enlisted. I was responsible for training across all of the combat arms, mechanized infantry, armor, artillery, aviation, because what I was responsible for was common to the operations of all of those efforts. So that was instilled during my occupational training, my AAT, advanced training from, and that's the classes that you take for your job after you have gone through basic. So it started right there in my training, understanding that there is real outcomes, even though I was going to a NATO nation, where peace is supposed to be in place, I was really on the fringe of a common activity, and knowing the responsibilities started working on me. And you spend a lot more attention to preparation, and you spend a lot more time in making sure that you are absolutely on point in course of your mission statement, whatever that mission might be. And I ran many missions. That was one of the hardest things was I was doing missions that required or should have required 2, 3, 4 people. I did them by myself. And it was due to manpower availability. What I did in the Army was kind of rare. And there weren't too many of us worldwide. So even though it would have been better if my missions were run with 2, 3, or 4 people, the reality was they only had one to send.
So Jonathan.
Yes, sir.
Real quick, I'm sorry. And finish your story if I cut you off. Do you feel that the mindset that your commanders or whomever had, do you feel that the mindset that was instilled in you, that you have to do it, that you can do it, that you're going to push through, that you're going to get the job done, is something that you carried with you after the service and maybe affected you in a negative way, where if you're going through something emotionally, physically, you have done so much in your time, in your life, in the service, that you can just power through it and handle it on your own? And I ask that because I think that's something that a lot of people, especially men, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong, especially men in the service, that's the mentality that's instilled in some cases, is that you don't feel emotional pain, physical pain, we got to power through it. And as we've learned, especially you and I, after working with John Anthony, you know, I think society is a little bit more aware now, is that that will end up being detrimental if you don't address what is going on inside your head, if that makes sense.
It does. And the patterns of behavior were set up in mission critical processes that I encountered in the Army. You learn how to disassociate from the consequences of emotional fallout. The mission is the only thing that matters.
Right.
What's in front of you to do. And hopefully there will be a time to decompress and level out and loosen up at a later time. But what happens in the Army is that doesn't happen. It takes weeks for that to happen, not just a few days.
Right.
So I learned that pattern of behavior. I applied it to my rescue squad work. And even in my job at General Electric installing X-ray equipment, I had the same pattern of behavior. The mission came first. Emotional consequences will be dealt at a date to be announced.
And then you kind of just get by that date, right?
Say again?
You kind of just skip over that date unintentionally, intentionally. I'll get to it later. I don't have time to address it. When I say address it, see people like John Anthony or a therapist, you just keep going.
And by an outside observer, it looks like procrastination.
Right.
When in actuality, you're already on to your next mission. In reality, you just didn't have time between the things that you did, either as a military person or as a civilian person. It's boom, boom, boom. And eventually you become overwhelmed. And that's when the downward spiral really begins.
So to your knowledge as a veteran, and I'm sure that you keep in touch with veterans, perhaps from our most recent war and things of that nature, is that something that could be a downfall to a veteran in any generation? And I'm going to try, and my mom always says I do this all the time, is I mix questions in the questions. So follow me here real quick. I'm sorry if you could. So the pattern for veterans like yourself, veterans that are perhaps a little bit younger, the pattern is, and you get out of the service. In some cases, you have a support system, whether it be financial, emotional, both. In the financial support system, that veteran can be told, son, daughter, whomever, you're home, take a few weeks, few months, relax, decompress, don't worry about anything financial, you're fine. Or maybe even the emotional side, you can live here, we'll take care of you, we'll help you transition, we'll take you to some groups or whatever, you'll be fine. And then in some cases, it's just no net, nothing below them, they just drop out, and so the downfall begins. Is that, would you say that's accurate?
Yes, sir, it's very accurate. The problem is basic, no matter what your service was, when it was, or where it was. There are situations that are encountered while in the service that occur at any time for every service person. And so your point is well made. And even when a person has a good support community to come home to, they may or may not make themselves responsible enough to take advantage for that time and do the work that unwinds those patterns of behavior that gets them into trouble. And so, one of the better things that I learned in John Anthony's Are You a Cat process, in several of the agreements, the first three words are, I am responsible. It doesn't say John Anthony is responsible. It doesn't say that my minister is responsible. It doesn't say my parents are responsible. It says, I am responsible. And so there is a disassociation in that leveling out process to make yourself fully responsible for all those things that take good care of you in that return to civilian life.
So, John Anthony and Jonathan, I want to kick it to John Anthony because I know his thoughts are rolling. But John, I want to ask you a question real quick. You deal with men and women of all different backgrounds, and I'm sure that in some cases, the walls, the roadblocks, whether they be their mental, physical, can be the same thing, right? Even if we're not veterans. I don't have time. I'm working two jobs. I don't have time. My husband is on me. I need to, whatever, right? My ex-husband, I'm going through something. I don't have time. So who is it up to help us take control and responsibility of what we need to do? Because I know in some cases, the people who come to you, it's because it's a little bit too late, right? So let's start with, what can our veterans do? I'm sure you've built some thoughts on the process. What can veterans do if to transition back into life, normalcy, and how can your tools help them do it better? Or just help them do it in general?
Well, I'd just like to point out that when we're a child, we need love, and adults need love too. And we don't know how or we're not able to give it to ourselves. And so we look for it from our primary caretakers. And if we have good parents or good grandparents or good foster parents, we can sometimes get that. And then as we get a little older, we start looking for it from our peers. And then we start looking for it from a mate. But we grow up thinking that the things that we need, that love, has to come from somebody else. And when we're a child, you know, and through our teenage years, you know, up until we start to reach about 16, 17, 18, we need that from other people. We become capable of giving it to ourselves, but we don't know that we can give it to ourselves. And we don't even know what it is that we need to give ourselves because it's not something we're taught. You know, we're taught you got to get a job and you got to support yourself, but we don't teach that you have to learn how to support yourself emotionally. And so what happens is when you have somebody who's 19, like Jonathan was, or somebody that goes to jail, to prison at 19, you're put into a situation that can oftentimes be life or death. And so you come up with a coping style that you kind of created when you were a child And that coping style is usually either numbing out to the pain, distracting myself to the pain, using addictions to distract myself, or getting angry at others, or getting angry at myself. And so when you go through, the traumas that you can experience when you're in service, or, whether it's critical missions in peacetime or in combat, or when you're in jail and you're fighting for your life, because people are trying to, it's a survival thing. You come up with a way of dealing with things. You create a very quick new coping strategy, and then you take that strategy into the rest of your life. And so that strategy usually doesn't teach people how to learn how to identify their feelings and see them for what they are, an area in their life where love is missing, and the love that's missing is from me to me. And as we talk about in the Are You a Catch, it's giving myself respect, understanding, acceptance, caring, appreciation, and trust. So what I would say to veterans, to try to answer your question, is that there are things that a person can do that will help them to bring love into their life that has been this absent when we aren't getting it from others and we're not able to give it to ourselves. And when we come home with that trauma and we feel a little alienated, we can sometimes push away the people in our life that used to give us that love and or can give us that love. And then it isolates us even more. And then that's when we feel even more scared that we're losing, we're not getting something. But see, we don't realize that we're scared. And so it comes out as anger. We're angry at ourselves. We're angry at others. We're angry at situations. And, the thing I'd like to get across to everybody, veterans or civilians, is if any person is angry, they are also frightened. And it's the fear of losing something that I have, or the fear of not getting something I desire. And so it's because we're not identifying those fears and then alleviating them, that's when we become vulnerable to them. And so we either try to hide them, ignore them, or we get angry and we act out. So the thing that contributes to those fears is our thinking and our negative fantasies or our positive fantasies. So to kind of tie it back into you, Jonathan, when you were going through that critical time of having to accomplish those missions and being responsible for all those people, you weren't aware of the concept of negative fantasies, which is when I'm trying to be in the future, but I'm here in the present back then. As you look back, do you think that negative fantasies played any role in heightening your concern and your fear and your emotions?
Yes, because in a previous assignment, I was in Frankfurt and I saw direct evidence. So at my new assignment with the last unit I was assigned to as a detachment, I did have negative fantasies. And it wasn't watching somebody else do it. It was watching me do it. And I wanted to address something earlier. I'm not changing the subject or anything, John Anthony, but the big thing about, or one of the big things that I encountered between military life and civilian life, is loss of control. In the Army, almost everything is controlled. In civilian life, there is a constant fear of loss of control. And as I was listening to your conversation and everything, one of the big drivers, and you and I have not spoken about it yet, John Anthony, and I expect to in our next conversation, one of my big drivers is fear of loss of control. And the Are You a Cat process draws that control back to me, where I feel more confident and feel better about what I am doing. It doesn't feed negative fantasies of loss of control or unknown consequences. So, returning to your question, absolutely so. I did not know the term. It was only a bad feeling between my shoulders, but I knew something was up.
So how have the tools helped you with those types of things now, as you maybe, you know, have thoughts about the past or experience similar dynamics in the present? How has it all helped you, Jonathan?
Well, when I started talking with you, John Anthony, my life was completely chaotic. And many of the agreements in the checking in process asks you to do those things that bring order into your life. And with order comes the sense of control. And certainly improves certain areas of your life. And this is where my Pan-American, Native American understanding comes in, is almost from the beginning, I was looking at the agreements and then adding in other agreements to take care of my responsibilities and ordering my life for spirituality, understanding the physical component that supports good mental thinking. And I may be losing my thought here. I haven't solved all my deficits, but am I approaching an answer to your question?
Yes. Yes. And for those that don't know, you know, the agreements are, you know, I agree I'm responsible for being safe. I agree I'm responsible for nurturing myself. I agree I'm responsible for having violence-free thoughts. I'm respectfully being verbally, emotionally, and physically violence-free with others. I'm willingly being verbally, emotionally, and physically violence-free to myself. I'm respectfully being violence-free to property and pets. You know, if I break any of these agreements, I agree to disclose it to the group. If I break any of these agreements, I'll remake the agreements to the group. And I agree to disclose to the group how my group work tonight changes my behavior this coming week. And I agree to be an active listener. So what you're saying, Jonathan, is that making those agreements gives you a direction of what to focus on and what to control within yourself as you're interacting with people. Is that accurate?
It's very accurate, John Anthony. My previous treatments did not give me a blueprint for approach. Your Are You a Cat process does.
I'd like to ask a question.
And it's a major component. I know I'm not going to share too many details, John Anthony, but I know that I have told you what all was done to me in my previous treatments, trying to encounter and solve my behavior problems. But this is the singular difference. Those agreements that bring order and give you a blueprint on how to go about it. Go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, sure. No, I'm sorry. So I know that John Anthony and I talked about it. I do have to, unfortunately, because we're having a good conversation here, jump off in a little bit, but I have a question, Jonathan, that for you, and then I'd like for John Anthony to tie in the tools and how it could work in this particular situation. If you understand what I think you understand what I'm trying to say. So long story short, Jonathan, and to those of you who are listening, Jonathan and I are both students of John Anthony and the tools, and we implement them in our everyday lives. And yes, John Anthony's talking about how anger can come from fear, the fear of what you're afraid of not getting, the fear of what may come, the fear of what may not come, the negative fantasies. But going back to veterans, Jonathan, is in some cases, or in most cases, is it a possibility, or is it just is there times where there's no fear that our veterans just don't know what to do, that they don't know what to do with themselves. They don't know what the next step is. And instead of there being fear or being positive, there's just like this feeling of just like, I don't know what to do. Right. And that can lead to the negative fantasies. And that's where John can start implementing the tools. But is that a factor that there's not just fear of everything, what may come, what the next step is, that there's just this blank, numb stage possibly for veterans when they get out, whether it be a week, a month, a few months, where they're just like, I can't pull it together. I don't know what I'm supposed to do, what I want to do. And nobody's really giving me any direction. Because going back to what you said at the beginning of the show, there's lots of direction. There's times to eat. There's PT in the morning. There's things that you need to do. And suddenly, you know, a veteran might become very frustrated with the, you know, our everyday therapist who's just like, well, what do you think you should do? And the veteran just like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. Right. And that's my fear. I'm not afraid of what may come or what's going on. I don't know how to feel. I don't know what the next step is. Is that something that might happen? And then Jonathan or John Anthony, how can one, a veteran, of course, especially, use the tools to help get to the next step so that they can begin healing?
Well, if I may, Ron, to answer you, what you have described is the state of complete overwhelm. And when you are in the state of complete overwhelm, you are disabled in the ability to think expansively or beyond your horizon or your nearest need or want. And with that constricted or reduced thinking, the possible solutions are unavailable.
Right.
And it takes someone like John Anthony to lay out this program that gives you that morning schedule, if you will, what I will do today to recover. And it literally is a recovery. You are recovering yourself as a civilian, transferring from the military organization style of life to the civilian everything and anything is possible style of life. Where choices were made for you, now you have to make your own choices.
Yeah. And real quick, before John Anthony says anything, I just want to say, Jonathan, thank you very much, because you did pick up what I was saying and you did understand what I was saying. And I guess, John Anthony, how can you help somebody get out of that complete state of being numb, right? Where do your, and I'm sorry, I completely lost my train of thought. Now I remember what I was going to say. Jonathan, thank you for noting that the tools are a regimen, that you can make them part of your day, that you can get up and say, here's the tools that John Anthony gave me. Here's how I can use them to get to the next step. Here's how I can use them to feel better. So that's, I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought. I think that's great that you said that, that they're not just tools that you use in the moment, even though you do use them in the moment, they're also tools that you get up and they can act as guidance. John, what do you think on my chopped up long question that I was asking?
Well, I think that, you know, the tools, it's not me. I don't take people any place. What I do is I've learned how to be with somebody where they are. And when I'm being with somebody where they are, they show me where they need to go. And I recently had a new person in one of my groups. He was an older person. And he was saying, you know, it's a one size fits all. You know, you're not going to put me into a category. You know, I'm different than other people, and you know, and you're not going to change me. And the thing is that I don't try to change anybody, because what I'm doing is I'm really helping people to learn how to identify what their fears are and what their shames and sadnesses are and their disappointments, and then what they need to do to address them and alleviate them by giving themselves that respect and that understanding, that acceptance, caring, appreciation, and trust that they're trying to make other people give them when they're angry with them, that they're wishing somebody else would come along and bring it into their life when they're numbing out or distracting themselves. So what I'm really teaching a person is how to grow in their own love, so that I'm not taking a jade plant and saying, okay, now we have to graft this rose bush branch on here, and that's who you need to become. I'm just working with that jade plant to be a more fuller jade plant so that it can reach out to the sun. You know, I'm helping that jade plant to see, you know, just how much water it needs and how much sunlight it needs. And so that it can put itself in that position to get that water and sunlight so that it can grow and be all that it can be. And so that's why the tools work for everybody, because we all need love and we all thrive on love. And when we have love in our life, it's a life that we can love. And when we don't, it's a very scary thing, because the very absence of love is fear. So that's what I would say is, learning how to take these tools and apply them to yourself. And I just create a space for the people that I work with to learn how to do that. And it's the repetition of doing it over and over again, week after week, that helps that person to create a new neural pathway response to their fear, rather than the one that they had, you know, created as a child or as that young man when they experienced something traumatizing, like, you know, being, you know, in a combat zone or being in a prison system or being out on the streets surviving or getting caught up in drugs and addiction and the survival of trying to support my habit and you know, still function. You know, so it doesn't matter, or if I've grown up with a you know, abuse as a child, you know, it's all about just helping a person to learn how to be more loving to themselves and then to others. And when I'm able to do that, say, then my life changes. But I'm growing in that change. It's not me having to become somebody that I'm not, because we all are loving people with the potential of it. So I'm not sure if you noticed, Ryan, but I think we've lost Jonathan in our podcast.
I saw the red phone. I wasn't sure if that was disconnected or muted.
Yeah, and he just sent me a text with question marks. So, and I know that you have a hard end here, because you have a very early to rise tomorrow.
Yeah, so, I'm sorry. I didn't realize how busy this week was going to be. So I do apologize, John. I was happy to at least get this hour in here. And we can definitely pick up again next week or 2 weeks. I'm actually off. I'm taking off. There's actually, just to give you an idea, I won't drag it on.
Okay.
We've been pretty busy and we just can't get caught up. So we're taking off a week just to get caught up. So in 2 weeks, I'm like off.
Okay. Well, I'm grateful as always to have you here and to to give recognition, honor, and respect to the veterans that serve our country. And so thank you. And I will say that there will be a podcast after this that when Jonathan and I are able to connect and talk about the Native American approach to bringing their warriors home and how they support them and or when they send them off. And so people listening to this can look forward to that and then other future podcasts that you and I have, Ryan. So thank you very much and get plenty of rest.
Thank you very much, John. Always a pleasure. And to anybody listening, if you're a veteran, thank you for your service. I know if you think that there's nobody thinking about you, I can assure you from my own experiences as somebody who has veterans in their circle, I can assure you from, as John said, being very involved with Jocko Willink and Leif Babin and the Echelon Front, that there are plenty of people that are willing to talk to you, help you get to the next step, whether it be helping you find a job, helping you emotionally, and just to kind of put a bow on everything that I just said and John Anthony and Jonathan and I were talking about tonight. One of the people in attendance who goes to a number of events with Jocko and his team is a mother of a fallen veteran that was in combat with the entire team. And right there, right? She lost her son. She is finding a way to give back and help other veterans. So, like I said, just trying to explain it and point out that there's just so many people that are willing to help and they have a pretty good idea of what you might be going through.
Yes, and if anybody would like to reach out to me, I can be reached at contact@supportivealliance.com. It's all one word, Supportive Alliance. And we have a website, which is www.supportivealliance.com. And that's how you can contact me. So thank you and have a good week. Take care.